you have your Bible or your cell phone, you might want to go to Romans chapter 1, verse 8. That's where we'll be today. Paul wrote the book of Romans to a group of people he hadn't met. They didn't have a Bible. And they lived in a time where they were a minority in a society that, unlike the Jewish Christians, they lived in a culture that was believed in God, had the Old Testament, had a moral base, ethical base. The Roman culture didn't carry that belief in God. They had belief in some gods. They had some moral base, but if you really study their culture, Seneca said they were a cesspool. That culture, a man of their time, that's how he described their culture. And so that's who Paul was writing to in the book of Romans. And as I talked about last week in the first seven verses, at the beginning of chapter one, Paul is introducing himself. They don't know Paul, he doesn't know them personally. He knows of them, and he cares about them. And so we're going to continue in verses 8 through 17. But first, I want to read those verses 8 through 17. I'm going to read, Lisa, if you'll. Paul wrote, "First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you, because your faith is being reported all over the world. God, whom I serve in my spirit in preaching the gospel of his Son, is my witness how constantly I remember you in my prayers at all times. And I pray that now at last, by God's will, the way may be open for me to come to you. I long to see you so that I may impart to you some spiritual gift to make you strong. That you and I may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith. I do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, that I planned many times to come to you, but have been prevented from doing so until now, in order that I might have a harvest among you, just as I have had among the other Gentiles. I am obligated both to Greeks and non-Greeks, both to the wise and the foolish. That is why I am so eager to preach the gospel also to you who are in Rome. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew, then to the Gentile. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last. Just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." So I'll do a little, have a little fun here. What do people need? This is the first verse of a song with the last line left out. Anybody tell me the song? Hank Williams. What song? No. But that's close. No? Well, a lot of people sang it. She was right. Hank Williams was right. "I'm so lonesome, I can cry. I hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is winding low. I'm so lonesome, I could cry. I've never seen a night so long. When time goes crawling by, the moon just went behind the cloud to hide its face and cry." Did you ever see a robin weep when leaves begin to die? Like me, he's lost the will to live. I'm so lonesome, I could cry. The silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky. And as I wonder where you are, I'm so lonesome I could cry. Hank Williams sang that song, I believe, in 1941. Could be wrong about that. I heard Bill Gaither say that that is the best, most poetic lyric about loneliness ever written. I don't know if that's true or not, but you get that. Now, Hank Williams, the song was about his wife. But if you say, what is the need of humans, most humans, most people, it's the need to know that somebody cares about us. To know that we're okay somewhere, that we're accepted. And it said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. We've heard that said. I think that may be true. A lot of truth in that. When Georgia and I came here and interviewed the first time we were here, very first question that we were asked after I preached, they had a food, and then we met with the pulpit committee. Some of you know this story. It was like 16 years ago, almost 17 now. In March, it'll be 17 years. Stan Carrillo said, do you like this church? Now, there were other questions about theology and doctrine and those type of things. But the very first question was, do you like this church? If I were to write a book for ministers, I probably won't. But I would title it, Do You Like This Church? And I think it's not true just for ministers. I think that's a need to know that people care about us, that they accept us. Not that we're perfect. We know we aren't perfect. If somebody says, if I say, Mitch, you're perfect, no, Mitch, we'll have a good laugh together because we're neighbors and we know we aren't perfect. Neither of us, you know. But that's so. And that's the other question. Do you like me? I mean, do you accept me? You know, we do all kinds of things to make sure we fit in. I mean, probably not to extremes for most of us, but still there's that sense that... Paul, there's actually six statements I'm going to talk about, things that he says. You know, think about that. He hadn't met the people at Rome. He told them last week in verses 1 through 7, we talked about last week, about his pedigree, why they should listen to him, what he had accomplished and so on, how he was chosen by God and sent by God. And now he gets a little more personal. He says, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you. Now, they don't know Paul from the man on the moon, and they get this letter from him, and they open it up, and he says, I thank God for you. The verse says, first, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you, because, and they say when you compliment somebody, you should... you know, you should attach something to it. I thank God, Paul said to them, for all of you, because your faith is being reported all over the world. People all over the world know about you. Wow. Means wherever he's been, now the world was a smaller place. Paul's world was a smaller place than our world today, but people know. Do you know that we're going to Uganda, four of us, to help build a church on property that we purchased from other trips? We were there, but through D.C., and then through my having been there three times, and through us purchasing that property where they worship now in a little building about the size of your front room, they know about Prineville Christian Church. just because we extended ourselves a little bit. You ever be in a town? There are towns. I'm going to talk about other towns in the Eugene area. When we were there, they had this phrase. They said, "Their faith. Their oh, he's a he or she's a faith center person." In Idaho, when we were in Payette, Ontario, on the border there, they say, oh yeah, Joe's a Calvary Chapel person. There was stuff coming out of that church, but people were out of that church going into the community, and there was a life there, and there was a caring there, and there was a difference making there that people noticed. And people said, ah. And it isn't about glory, and it isn't about accolades, and it isn't about that. But for Jesus, Paul said, hey, I heard about you. I've heard about you. I've heard about your faith in God, the way you carry yourselves as Christians. What a good thing to hear for them. And then he said, I remember you in my prayers. I'm praying for you. He said, God, whom I serve in my spirit in preaching the gospel of his Son, is my witness how constantly I remember you. I remember you in my prayers at all times. I think that's interesting. It says, God is my witness. I'm not lying here, you know. I say, how many people say, will you pray for me? Oh, yeah, I'll pray for you. You know, I have a buddy who, when somebody says, will you pray for me? He says, yes, and right now. And he stops and they pray. And part of the reason he does it is because he thinks it's a good way to do it. But the other reason he does it is, he told me this, so I won't forget. You know? So, oh yeah, I'll pray for you, Jim. And then he said, oh, about 3 days later, he said, oh yeah, I was going to pray for Jim. You know? But I think it's important to say, is it all right with you if I pray for you now? Because I've had people say no. Or I've said, when I visit in the hospital or some other place, I might say, is it okay if I pray for you? They haven't asked me to, but I'm there and visiting in there, you know. And I say, and I've had people say no. I said, okay. That's okay. You know, I mean, I think we represent God. God's Spirit lives in and through us. There was the daughter of a Pentecostal preacher from somewhere in the South. Can't remember now. And she used to say to us over at Lowell Christian Church when Georgia and I were in our 20s, she'd say, the Holy Spirit is a gentleman. And if we represent the Holy Spirit, we should always conduct ourselves as gentlemen or gentlewomen. I think that's important. But he says, I pray for you. I want you to know, not only do I, I'm proud of you, I'm amazed, impressed, but I pray for you. And he says, I want to see you. I want to come visit you. I long to see you. And he said three reasons. And one of them isn't that they had great potlucks. But I think great potlucks are an important thing. So I long to see. Oh, we don't do potlucks anymore. We do snack and chats. Snack and chats. Still food downstairs. Visit while we eat. Okay. I long to see you so that, one, I may impart to you some spiritual gift. I want to bring something from God to you. I want to do that, you know. And what Mitch and Lisa and Rich won't know until you're there in Uganda is what a blessing it is for them for us to be there. And we won't, you know, we're going to help build a building. We're going to, nothing earth-shattering we're going to do. We're just going to be there. You don't know what it means to them for us to travel from here to there. And it's just, you're going to be blown away. You know, I mean, I've been there three times, 2010, 2014, 2016, And when I get there, you ought, Chumungus Mike, he's the kind of the minister over the churches in the villages there. He'll say, Dan, you know, it means something to them. We build relationships. We care. I want to give you, we give them something by going, but there's more to that than that. And he says, I want to make you strong. When we think about this, I have a little sign in my, I don't want to tell you, it's not about me. I don't want to, but this is important to me. This is my goal in life. I hope that, and it should be all of our goals in life because it's what God asks us to do. Every person we meet in our lives, every person we run across, in the ways that are possible for us, they should be better for having met us. We should in some way help them. However that is, maybe it's just a smile, maybe it's just encouragement, maybe it's just an ear to listen. Maybe it's, you know, sometimes people have made me better by listening to be stupid and not telling me I was stupid. And sometimes people have made me better by saying, our minister, Jim Singleton, our minister since we were, mine since high school and George's when we were in our 20s, one time I was riding with him in his pickup, and so somebody came up and I just started bad-mouthing this person. You know, I was just breaking them up one side and down the other and all this stuff. I know it's shocking for you that I would ever do that, but I was younger then. I wasn't as perfect. So anyway, if you're new here, you know that's, I know that's not true. I know. Anyway, so I got all done. Now the appropriate thing to do if you're riding with somebody and they rake somebody over the coals, the appropriate thing to do is join in. You know? Kind of, that's the thing. Jim was driving and he didn't say anything. He just drove. And I felt like the biggest fool. I mean, he could have tongue-lashed me. He could have just said anything he wanted, and it wouldn't have the impact that him not saying anything had. That pickup ride with him, had to be 40-some years ago now, helped me be a better person. I'm not going to tell you that I'm perfect in all that. I never do that or anything, because I struggle with some stuff, but... See, we can help people. He wanted to help make them strong. He wanted to impart something to them and help them be stronger. Help them be stronger. And all of us do that for the people, have the potential to do that for the people around us. And probably we do that more than we know that we do. And the third thing the reason he wanted to see them is he wanted to be mutually encouraged by them. Mutually encouraged. It wasn't just that Paul was going to say, I'm Paul, let me climb up on the ladder here and straighten you guys out and tell you what you need to know and all that. He says, no, you encourage me too. That's relationship. When we go to Uganda, it encourages them. We'll be encouraged by them as well. But that's true for today. I mean, I think about this at times. You don't always feel like coming to church, I'm pretty sure. Because I know that's true, because I don't always feel like coming to church. But they pay me to show up, so it's a pretty good idea if I do, you know. But sometimes you don't, and I get that. And before I was paid to be at church, sometimes I didn't show up. But I think it's important for us to think about the fact that it isn't all about me. When you're here, it encourages others. It encourages me. Just that we're here in the same room. It's like a family reunion. You have a family reunion, and 10 people don't show up because they just had other things to do. Now, sometimes people have other things to do, get I get that. Don't misunderstand. But when it's a choice and when it's an option, even if it's a little hard, even if I don't really feel like it, it encourages other people. It really does. When we come in, when we're there, it's like a family reunion, and it makes. And I'll tell you how you can mutually discourage. One time I was preaching at Fall Creek, and it was like in the 90s, and in Western Oregon they don't have air conditioning. I mean, they put the windows up, but no air conditioning. So it was hot in that building, and I started preaching. I hadn't preached for 3 minutes, and over half the congregation was asleep. It was hard to go on. It was discouraging. So I don't mind if you sleep. There was a guy who at Fall Creek, Randy Green, he says, yeah, I'd come to church, but Sunday's my only day off, and I like to sleep in on Sunday morning. I told him, and this was true, some of the best sleep in Fall Creek happens during the worship service on Sunday morning. So he actually came. So work. There's an event. I could write a book on evangelism book on that. So anyway, but that mutual encouragement, you know, that's important. We encourage each other. Paul wrote, "I do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, that I planned many times to come to you, but it wasn't always able to." But he says, "I wanted to come." Another reason he wanted to come, in order that I might have a harvest among you. See, Paul, he cared about people. And he gets a bad rap as being kind of a hard-nosed guy, and maybe was sometimes, but he had this deep heart for people. I wanted to have a harvest among you. Jesus said, the fields are white for harvest. There are all these people here in Primeville, all these people that don't know anything about Jesus, or Jesus has a bad rip, or some Christians have given Jesus, or whatever, you know? And he's saying, I want to come because I want more and more and more of you to know about Jesus, not just for salvation, but how Jesus can change your life and make your life better, and all of that. That's what he said to them. And he said, I am obligated. What is obligation? If you buy a car and you finance it, and they give you this little thing, little packet, you're obligated every month to write a check or have it automatically out of your bank. They expect that you'll do that. You've obligated yourself to do that. That's the idea of obligated. Paul said, I am obligated to Greeks and non-Greeks, both. Both to Greeks and non-Greeks, both to the wise and the foolish. In other words, I'm obligated to everybody. I'm obligated to everybody. That is why I'm eager to preach the gospel. Now, not everybody's called the same or gifted the same as Paul, both in abilities and in calling. And later on in this book of Romans, actually chapter 12, so it'll be a while before we get there, we'll talk about motivational gifts. But to think about every person, you know, I don't know about you, but we run across some people that, and we never would say this out in the light of day, but we're not that concerned about them for whatever reasons. Paul said, I'm obligated to everybody. Paul was a Jew's Jew, you know. He was a Pharisee's Pharisee. And he said, I'm obligated to all these, to everybody. I want them to know the good news that I know. To preach the gospel, to preach the good news. And he says, I am not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. There are times in our culture, and it's becoming that more and more, You know, it used to be in the time I grew up, they said, what's your faith? You say, Christian. And check it boldly. And everybody would say, cool. That isn't so much the case anymore. In our culture, we know this. Christianity is becoming more and more a minority, more less and less understood. And that's the way it was in Paul's day. In Corinthians, he talks about how he was persecuted for being a Christian. Well, I don't think we've faced a lot of that overt type of persecution. But he said, I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of the gospel. Not ashamed of the gospel. The good news. It's good news of Jesus Christ. We have to be careful when we share it. You know, one of my professors, he said, how come the good news sounds so much like bad news sometimes? You know, I think we have to make sure we understand what God said in balance. The gospel, I was going to read this, but you probably know 1 Corinthians 15. If not, read it when you get home. That's the essence of the gospel, but it doesn't really talk about the impact that the gospel has in people's lives, both for salvation and life change and relational healing and all of the things. If we really understand Christianity and practice it well, it's a whole life-changing thing, far deeper and wider than just I'm going to go to heaven when I die. But that is a huge, huge, of course, piece of the gospel. The gospel is the power of God. It's God's idea. I didn't make it up. You didn't make it up. Paul didn't make it up. Nobody made it up. It is the power. It's God's message. God's power brings salvation. Salvation to everyone who believes. Later in the letter, we'll get more into that. First to the Jew. The good news of Jesus came first to the Jew in Paul's day and then was spread out to the Gentiles. It was for the whole world. Part of the persecution that Paul had was because he took it outside of the Jewish circle. You know, we got to be careful not to have a circle that we want to, you know, kind of fence us in and the good guys in and the bad guys out or something like that. In the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. It's righteousness by faith. We're going to wrestle around with that idea. Righteousness by faith. Righteousness that is by faith from first to last. Just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. Righteous means what? Being right. Being relationally right with somebody. In this case, being relationally right between us and God. That means all of the things. Chris sang the song this morning. What was the name of that song? It was perfect for this. The one that listed all the things that God would still stand by us. The God who stays. That is righteousness by faith. And that isn't natural. That isn't natural. You know, we don't grow up with that message inside or outside the church. I mean, you know, you get what you deserve. You get what you earn. For the kids that said to me, once our dad says sorry, it's too late. You know? And then this thing comes and says, Jesus died on a cross for your sins, took his sins off of you and onto him. And if you ask for that forgiveness or receive, you don't have to ask for it, it's already given, we receive it, I think, that's how I understand it, then you're okay, and you can walk into the presence of God, walk up and say, you know, I don't know, one time when I was a kid, we lived up at the end of a mile-long gravel road, Reuben Lay Road, My granddad built it, and so it was named after him, Reuben Ley Road. And we were at the end of the road. We could have walked from our house in Western Oregon to Bend without crossing any roads, maybe some logging roads. Well, it was a great place to grow up. And then when I was in the eighth grade, they built a reservoir half a mile from where we were, where you could water ski and stuff like that. I had like a blessed childhood, I tell you. It was wonderful. But we had some rules. We'd roam, my brothers and I, Mom said we'd leave the house in the morning and come back at night. We'd roam the hills. And we had our BB guns, and then we had our 22s, you know, all of that stuff. And but well, there are some rules. You could, with your BB guns, you couldn't shoot Tweety birds, the little guys. And you couldn't shoot robins, red-breasted robins. Blue jays, for some reason, blue jays weren't exempt. Or they were exempt. You could shoot those guys, but they were too smart anyway. But one time, I was out, and there was this robin sitting in this bush, just mocking me.
Yes.
Yep. And so, you know the rest of that story. I went home. Oh, my brothers, I said, don't you guys, I was older so I could threaten them. Don't you guys say a word. I went to bed at night. I couldn't sleep. I lay there. I felt bad. We lived in a house, a one-bedroom house that my dad had built. My parents slept in the front room on a height of bed kind of a thing. My brothers and I slept in the bedroom. It was eating at me. And I was about 8 years old or seven or something. So I went out, woke my folks up, you know, and I said, I'm going to tell you something, you know. Tears don't always help, by the way. I was like, yeah, I shot this robin, you know. Anyway, I won't say that there wasn't consequences. I don't remember what they were. But you know what I do remember? My folks forgave me. They didn't hold it against me. You know? Well, that's the way it is with the good news of Jesus. There's a lot worse things than that. What I did, shooting that robin when I wasn't supposed to. But all sin is knowing what we should do and not doing it. You know, that's one knowing, that's one definition. And God forgives us. That's what Paul said. I want to tell you guys about that. I want to tell you about that. That it's that God did this for you, and it's about faith. People don't care how much you know, but they know how much you care. I think that's pretty true. I mean, eventually people care how much you know, but we want to know that people care about us. Jesus cares. God cares. God cares about us. That's the good news. That's Paul's message. Through this book of Romans, he's going to really lay it out in a way that's probably the best in the New Testament, I think. Jesus cares. Not only that, I mean, we need to hear that message that Jesus cares. But everybody around us, those closest to us, or the person that checks us out at Ray's or Bi-Mart. And sometimes it's harder with the people closest to us. They need to know we care. God cares for us. We need to hear that message. And then we need to share that message. I care for you. We go to Uganda. That's the message we're taking. We care for you guys. Primeville Christian Church cares that you have a building to meet in, and so on. I hope this is helpful. there's the next 2 weeks, Mike Junker is going to be here. And then on the Sunday we're back from Uganda, we will the four of us will kind of talk about some what we did in Uganda and some of that. And then later on we'll have a Uganda night where we have slides and all of that. We won't have time. We'll be here Sunday like 3 days after we get back. But and then we're going to go on in Romans, and I would really encourage you to spend some time reading chapter 1, verse 18 through 331. You can read further if you want. And here's why I will really hope you'll read that and give it some serious thought, because I'm probably going to do it in about 3 weeks, but it's an umbrella and it needs to be over the whole message to understand the whole good news of God. Because part of it is bad news, but part of it is good news, and if you separate them, you don't get the whole truth of what God talks about. So I really encourage you to do that homework.